Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. This is Janine, and you're listening to Lunch with Loudon. Coffee Talk Radio shows are part of the Coffee Party Be the Media project. You can join our team by going to www.coffeepartyusa.com/volunteer. And when you get the chance, say, hey, I want to play Be the Media. So I want to thank everybody for joining us today, all you time travelers out there. I started the call for this episode of Lunch with Loudon has to do with you can't make me go back there. And in the blog, again, on www.coffeepartyusa.com, I sort of pointed to things that looked like going backwards. Debbie Lynn and I have been talking since that post, and since we've had some amazing reaction from folks on the Facebook page and Join the Coffee Party Movement Facebook page. And so I'd like to welcome Debbie Lynn Molyneux from Portlandia into our conversation, and we'll talk more about what people were sharing with us. Hello, Debbie Lynn.
Hey, Janine. And hey, everybody out there listening on Blog Talk Radio today. I'm so glad to be here.
And, well, I am thrilled to have you with me.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just really interesting to think about all these, you know, people that want to, you know, take our country back, as we put in the email blast today. And you know, you and I joke around about take the country back, you know, to what, from what. You know, it is our country. And at least we think it is. And then there's always that kind of questioning, like, well, isn't it?
Well, it's our country, but the question, because is it our government? You know, I think those are two very distinct things. And I'll have to say that some of the comments that people have made have been wonderful. The premise of the show originally was basically, you know, in terms of access to voters, voter participation, there's a lot of states where that looks like that's going backwards in the face of really faux information about voter fraud. I mean, and there are places where, you know, clearly certain lawmakers are trying to take us back to before Roe v. Wade. There are clearly other things that we'll talk about today, but there were a lot of things that I was very pleased to see, and I thought, lovely. I want this reminder. And it has to do with, frankly, more recent history. So on my magic dashboard here, I'm going to click over to Join the Coffee Party Movement and share with you a couple of the things. I want to go back to a time when there is civility. I want to go back to a time when the two sides of the aisle work together. Where's another one? And, well, when I shared this with Debbie Lynn, those two comments alone, things came to mind for me, and I started making a list. What would I like to see again? And interestingly enough, most of the things I'd like to see again were undone only recently, you know,
right,
in fairly recent history. So, like, I'd like to see there be a penalty for expatriating money, you know. I mean, right now, money can run to the Caymans or anywhere else, and it's gone. That used to be against the law. There was a prohibition against moving money out, and it cost you to move it back. And now it's penalty-free. You can move money in and out of America. I'm talking huge sums, corporate sums of money, without penalty. That's very new. Debbie Lynn, what about you? What's something you'd like to see come back?
Well, I mean, kind of jokingly, when we were getting ready for the show, I was like, well, you know, part of the good old days was that 94% tax rate when the highest and wealthiest among us actually paid 94% in taxes. And
the top tier was 94. Right, the top tier
was
94%.
And I'm not saying, and I'm not saying that we necessarily need to go back to a 94% tax rate, but there was a sense of like of fairness, if you will, in a tax code. That it was assumed that if you made money off of America and the workers of America, that you actually gave something back, and it at the time was through taxation. And I think that I miss that sense of like whether it's called corporate citizenship now or community, there was just a sense of like, well, of course this is how it works. And I still see that sometimes at the local level, but I have no sense of it from these global corporations. None.
Oh, none. And remember when J.D. Messenger was on our show a couple months ago, his statement, and frankly, he comes from a background
global
where he
corporate
has the right
background.
To make this statement. That's mm-hmm. right. That's right. His statement was, globalization has been the biggest enemy of democracy the world has ever known. And left to its own devices, there will be no real democracy left in this republic or in any other. You know, it's, so the whole, I guess I'd like to go back to a time when globalization wasn't what it became, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Well, I guess when there was still potential and greed didn't rule. I mean, that I guess that's what we're getting back to. It's kind of like, it's kind of a tone or an attitude. Because the attitude of greed has and privilege has really wrecked, you know, it's wreaked havoc upon the world, not just the United States.
Oh, right. It's economically crushing the planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, globalization all by its lonesome is economically crushing the planet. And so obviously in our blog post today, we talked about the things we're going backwards, not so good. And in a way, going back to a time when there wasn't the money in politics that made stuff like this possible. So maybe we could just go back 15 years instead of going back 200 years. But when you read what's going on in North Carolina right now, because, you know, it's in the news today. It's not the only state that's doing this, but it's the one in the news today. And if you happen to click on the link in our blog to the press conference this morning in North Carolina, where they talked about just how far back North Carolina is being taken in terms of citizens' rights and voter access and the right to participate in the vote, it's a very telling, you know, 10 minutes. If you can take that time to reach it. I'm not sure why people want to take voting back to colonial levels. I mean, what, women next? You know, actually, women are hugely impacted by all of this because it's people
mm-hmm.
who can't, there's a huge economic component to who is disallowed access to voting based on these new rules. And it's interesting to me that the same legislation included stuff like, oh, we're going to raise the amount an individual can contribute to a campaign. You know, we're going to give those that have even more citizen rights, and we're going to take away from those that have less their citizen rights. And it's so to me, that's just going back to colonial times or pre-Civil Rights Act times at a minimum. It's very fashionable to be very cruel in this area.
Yeah. Well, and the fewer people that are actually voting, the easier it is to control the outcome. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, I think that's a legitimate, I don't want to go back there.
Right.
Just
I don't
like
either.
Just like in Texas, the whole notion that we're going to go back to before Roe v. Wade is, you know, it's mind-boggling to me. You know, I don't know how the same people who don't want drones flying over their neighborhoods think they ought to have their head in the bedroom or have their head in, you know, between me and my doctor. It's just does not make sense to me, and I hope someone will call in 646-929-2495. And, you know, if you have an opinion one way or the other on that one, by all means, we can share it. But it all seems to just come back to we're all in such a survival mode that we somehow think these things that have nothing to do with survival will, you know, be our way to grasp control and, you know, go from surviving to thriving again. And everyone, when you talk that way, you're totally forgetting that the people that opted out of American society are big business and big money. They're no longer American citizens. They're global citizens who still would rather plant their flag here. But, you know, I don't know that it's to anybody else's benefit that they plant their flag here, frankly. So, Debbie Lynn, you had mentioned how you felt about what was going on with NSA as something you'd like to
discuss. Well, kind of a bright spot. You know, we didn't actually like win the vote yesterday on the Amash Amendment, but it was going. It has definitely swung back in the favor of like, let's have a conversation about the Patriot Act, because the Patriot Act is what gave the NSA these broad sweeping powers to maintain our phone records. So they're evidently not recording every phone call we're making. If they are, please hang up and abide by the Fourth Amendment right now. Do your job. But the I love what you love it when you told me about that one, Janine. So, but the but they are maintaining our phone records about who we call and how long we talk to them for. And yesterday, the Congress upheld the section of the Patriot Act to give NSA the right to do so. But it was close. It was a 12-vote separation between them being able to do that and not being able to do that. And before, we never even had a conversation about it. So thank you, Patrick Snowden, who's still sitting in the Moscow airport, for at least giving us the opportunity to have the conversation. And Senator Wyden from Oregon, we love him, who is having passionate conversations and giving speeches about why we need to stop this madness of surveillance on our own citizens.
Well, if I can intervene, Debbie Lynn, this is the reason why I mock the people that say, I didn't know, because Senator Wyden, Democrat, Oregon, you know, look him up. The last time, maybe the last two times the Patriot Act was reconsidered, he said, I cannot support this bill because there are too many secret components. You don't even know. He's speaking to the mm-hmm. Senate. You don't know what you're voting on. We should right. never be in a position of having things included in a law that requires such security clearance that the people voting on it are not read in. And then, which to me sounds sort of basic, it's like 101. And then the next thing that he told them all along, so this is not news to anybody. This is years ago. He said, you know, we have to consider, you know, we have to consider if this is so sensitive that the people voting on it can't even vote on it, why is it up for a vote? What is the purpose? What is the power? What is that? And the thing is, it's so big and jangled up. It's like if you vote no because there are secrets, then you're voting no on everything. And this that drives me nuts.
It is. Even yesterday or before the vote, and this was something you and I wanted to point, or I wanted to point out, because to me this is part of the madness. We have a new caller from 602. We'll get to you in just a minute. The NSA actually had to do two briefings on this yesterday. So they held two-hour briefings yesterday before Congress voted on this, one for the Republicans and one for the Democrats. And only congressional members could attend. And I want to know, why the hell could they not have one briefing? Can the Republicans and the Democrats not sit together to get a briefing from the NSA? Do they tell them the same thing? Do they tell them something different? What the hell?
I know. Last week I called this bipolar thinking. It's just bipolar thinking. It's like we are so them and us. So I agree with the person who posted on Join the Coffee Party Movement. I want to see both sides of the aisle start to work together again. we've dedicated many shows talking about how all this spin and all this polarization is just a part of dancing for dollars, money, and politics. And if someone wants to say more about that, I'm welcome to, but you hear this too much from me. Meanwhile, how about we bring in our new caller from area code 602. Your mic is live. Welcome to Lunch with Loudon. And to whom am I?
Oh,
602.
Well,
hello. Hello.
Am I on or what?
You are.
Oh, okay. Well, so far as the abortion issue, I think the abortion is taken out of our hands. We all eat GMO foods and GMO vaccines, and I think the idea of abortion, there will be much more abortions from genetically modified babies that are never born. And I think to save money, they will have more abortions even. So I think it's a moot point, really, because of... Go ahead.
Well, you know, that's actually very interesting. I didn't catch your name, though. Can you let us know who we're talking to?
Yeah, my name is Dennis.
So this is kind of an interesting piece that no one's brought up to me before, but I have personal experience with. I grew up in an agricultural community, and I grew up in that community prior to DDT being removed from the scene. And everybody I knew worked on farms in the summer. You know, it might be an Irish farm, it might be a cherry orchard, it might be, but it was very agricultural community, and just everybody worked in the summer for sure. And when I went back to class reunions, it was very telling. The number of miscarriages among my peers, now this is just my anecdotal story, the number of miscarriages of children with issues, health issues, it was startling. And somebody had proposed, well, perhaps, you know, this is just that our parents didn't talk about this, our mothers didn't talk about this, that miscarriages happened and we just didn't know. And so there was a group of us that went back after this reunion who really looked into this issue. And I promise you, our exposure to agricultural processes back in the 60s, the early 60s, made a difference in our ability to have families. And made a difference in terms of the children that were born to us. And so that you say now that, you know, GMOs could, you know, alter things, I'm not surprised at all. I'm not, because for one thing, the FDA has not required that investigation. Right?
Well, it's
I mean,
on purpose.
Let's face it.
Go ahead.
Well, it could be on purpose. You know, when you shrink government to the point you can drown it in a bathtub, right? Isn't that the famous quote? Of course they're not going to be doing their job. But there is no such study or such evaluation of the information. Again, I've shared before, I used to work in research and development labs that did peer review replication of research. And so someone else would put out a study, we would try to duplicate it, right, see if we got the same results. And way back in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s, we were dealing with genetically altered organisms. In our lab, we could contain that stuff as long as it was in a fume hood, right? The minute, or maybe as long as it was in the lab, because we had a highly sophisticated ventilation system. As soon as we put it in the greenhouses, even though they were filtered in, filtered out, we had stepped in the water pool in and out, you know, to clean the boots. It was booties. It was lab coats that didn't leave the greenhouse. The whole bit, we could no longer contain those organisms because it was our job, of course, to monitor our immediate environment and see what escaped. Well, it escaped. And
yeah,
so
you
the
know,
whole idea, go ahead.
Was it even worse? Well, actually, far worse, is the radiation from Fukushima, Japan, is already on the West Coastline, all the way up and down California and Oregon and the rest of it, and it will go around the world. In fact, airborne, it already has gone around the world. But the ocean current will deposit even more. And we eat that. We eat fish. We eat sea salt. We think it's healthy, but it isn't. It'll make you sick 20, 30, 40 years. You'll have cancer, and you can't prove anything. So this is all calculated. You know, there are many ways that they'll get you, really. It's really to depopulate the world. In other words, murder. It'll make like Nazis look like choir boys, what's going on really now. But what can I say? I mean, there's so much pollution. The CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, there's a documentary on the titled The Vanishing Mail, or The Disappearing Mail, that less males, babies, are being born, and a lot of newlyweds are infertile. And the ones that manage to have babies, they're very sick, sickly, and female. So there you are. I mean, it's uncovered one thing after another, and it's a nightmare.
Right, and so if you bring this back to what, is there something worth going back to or something that we need to move forward on? When you talk like this, it reminds me that I'd like to go back to the days of Walter Cronkite, you know, where people actually reported news. Because I think most people don't know, for example, that Fukushima is still spewing radiation.
That's
and
right.
That, you know, those of us who live on the West Coast are painfully aware of this. One of the things we used to do back in my laboratory days is we took the daily background radiation level reading. And we had to because some of our research used radioisotopes as a tracer. And
yeah.
So we had to be able to compare data results produced on that day with background radiation. And background radiation on the Pacific coast is forever altered. It has changed. There used to be, I don't think it's either 6 or 8 daily recording stations in Oregon. And when Fukushima first happened, those places were printing their data daily. Excessive radiation was found in dairy products all up and down the West Coast. And
right.
We no longer can go online and find if that is true. After
right. I mean,
a couple of months, those data stations were no longer publicized. And
right.
I followed this. And so where is the truth? You know, and frankly, as big a crisis as Fukushima is,
it's 300,
why, you know, why we're not talking more. Go ahead.
It's 300 times that of Chernobyl, I heard. 300
Oh, easily.
Times.
Chernobyl
yeah.
was an event. This is not an event. This is an uncontained disaster that is still at work. But I don't want to dwell too long on this one, but I do want to make the point that hopefully you called in to make, which is we're not informed. And there was a time when we were. There was also a time when we were not. But going forward, I think what we want to see is actual, meaningful investigation of these things. And I know there's a few Facebook sites that are very accurate and share news reports that are, vetted information about this particular tragedy. But I am so with you. We need to be, the conversation needs to be out there, in public, available, and you know, investigative journalism has become almost a lost art. So I want to thank you for your contribution. I need to move on to the next person, but I'm going to, I may come back to you. Is that okay?
Okay.
Thank you so much for your call.
All right. Thank you.
And let's see, our next caller is area code 508. I'm opening up your line now. Welcome to Lunch with Loudon. And can you let us know your name, please?
Hi, it's Howard Berkowitz from Massachusetts.
Hey, how are you?
My area of interest is more the intelligence one. My concern is legitimate on the briefings, but I've been involved in the field for a long time, and my concern is that the congressional oversight mechanisms haven't worked in decades. On the other hand, as I read it, while it may be a problem in law, from what I've seen, at least for the metadata surveillance, is legal. There needs to be, I believe, a national, I won't say dialogue, because some of this is going to have to be conducted by, essentially by classified studies, but with some authenticity, with congressional authorization, so on, is what is coming from this kind of surveillance, and to make some rational decision, is the intrusion worth the security? I don't know, but from what I know of the field, there's a lot of jumping to conclusions in both directions.
Howard, yeah. This is Debbie Lynn here.
Hi, Debbie.
How are you doing?
Pretty good.
So the first thing that you said there was that that it was legal, and yes, it is legal because the Patriot Act authorized.
Not just the Patriot Act. Look at the case from 1979 Supreme Court decision in Smith versus Maryland, which specifically said there is no expectation of right of privacy for telephone metadata. The reason is the telephone system won't work unless you provide the metadata to third party. In other words, that's what your telephone is sending to the central office. The telephone system depends on that being there. And the court interpretation was that waives privacy.
Okay, so this is going back to besides the Patriot Act.
Right, there's a considerable body of law besides the Patriot Act. The idea of what was called the pen register, which is obsolete technology for metadata, first is mentioned in the Communications Act of 1934. Now, in that, the assumption was that you got a warrant. This is just for the who you called and when and so on.
Right.
But there was a provision that the Attorney General could certify that something was necessary and no warrant was needed. There really wasn't a lot of stuff done on that. To some extent, the Communications Assistant to Law Enforcement Act of 1994 was a technological catching up to the pen registers and such were obsolete, but they were techniques that were, again, the 1994 legislation assumed there would be a warrant. Where the Patriot Act, yeah, and the Patriot Act actually is an extension of some existing precedent that the idea was metadata was considered to be a business record. Business records could be requested through a national security letter, which preceded the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act strengthened it, but it really the Patriot Act. Go ahead.
So then what I'm hearing, though, is that these were business records that could be requested from the businesses, but what's different about this now is that now our government is collecting the data and storing it forever under the pretext of security, because any one of us could turn into a terrorist at any time. So therefore, we better save this data. And so
I wouldn't quite interpret it that way.
I'm obviously stretching it a bit, but that's the why else would our government need to save our phone records and every email we ever send?
One is I think there should be a statute of limitations on it, but let's take something NSA did for foreign intelligence for many years and is probably still doing. What they would do is typically they had warehouses back when magnetic tape was a storage full of Soviet military traffic that they couldn't read. They typically stored 3 to 5 years' worth on the theory that at some point they would break the encryption and could go back and get historical material. The problem with metadata and the way you use it is that if you are trying to trace associations, you
mm-hmm.
need historical data. Now, the question is, do we say how long is it kept for, so on. The telephone companies typically keep it for about 2 years anyway because it's needed for billing data. That's what they generate the call from. Incidentally, Europe, since 2006, the governments have required, this is European Parliament resolution, but it's required the service providers to keep this information for the convenience of the government. The implementation varies per country, but it's not exactly a pot kettle black situation when, in fact, European governments have been retaining this or having it retained for them for some time.
Right. But to me, there's a distinct difference between having a company that I'm doing business with retaining business documents that I've agreed to and having a central agency collecting the data from all the businesses I do business with so that they can build a profile of any person at any time.
I guess I don't see that further.
That's what PRISM does.
Excuse me?
That's what the PRISM program does.
No, it does not. No, what you said is build a profile of someone at any time. They have the data, yes. It could even be warranted, but it is technically necessary if you're going to meaningfully do metadata tracing that you have it for multiple copies, companies, or if someone is a Pacific Bell customer and someone is a Verizon customer, you really can't do anything useful with it unless you have both.
Well, and I guess I would like them, if they need to do that, that they have to go get the warrant and request the data
certainly there are parts they need a warrant for, no question. Anything that would deal with content. The problem in part is, now in Europe, it's one of the complaints of the ISPs and telcos is the government has told them to retain a couple of years' worth of data, and it's on their dime as far as the cost of the additional storage.
Which gets passed on to their customers, just like we're going to be paying for it through taxes.
Well, it's different than passing it on to customers and then teaching in general revenue, just like with healthcare. It's one thing when we're taking it as a group, and it's a very different thing, say, in healthcare, when you do cost shifting to slam it to the customers that are least insured. If it's worth doing as a government basis, I feel the government needs to be paying for it. It doesn't need to go to the rate.
Well, I have a question, Howard.
One way or the other.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I think that's a question worth answering, and then I'm going to ask one.
Okay, who's on?
Or was that not a question? Was that not a question,
yeah.
Debbie Lynn? I'm sorry. So my question was this. My question was this, Howard. Is there somewhere to go forward or somewhere to go back to with this? Are you happy this as it is now? Or is there some tweak forward or back that you'd like to see?
I'm not happy with it right now because no one goes on. I think there's a good case of what happened in 1995. In that case, there was something called the Data Encryption Standard, which was something where NSA changed an encryption device or algorithm that was made available for civilian use. There was an argument that the NSA had watered it down so they could get into it. The Senate Intelligence Committee convened a panel of independent experts that it was agreed would be given total classified access to the reasoning for that. And they would give, though, an unclassified report saying, did NSA change DES such that it could read it? And their answer was, no, they didn't. End of discussion. It turned out about 10, 20 years later that NSA did it for quite different reasons, not to break into it, but to cover the existence of a particular classified analytic technique, which is now known, but that what they were doing is covering the use of the technique. Now, I would like to see a panel, much like was done in 1985, that said, okay, you guys are cleared for everything. You are not going to give an open dump of everything, but you tell us the following things. How much threats did actually get stopped as a result of these programs? How effective are they? How intrusive are they? And you can get some general information on that. I do not accept that you can't say anything about it and give useful information to terrorists. I think, though, that it can't be done in the open. You've got to have technical experts working with access to everything. There have been precedents. There's the Rockefeller Commission. There's the Church Committee. We haven't had a review of Intelligence Committee, certainly since the Patriot Act. I would guess that in some respects it's more parallel to Benghazi. In 1983, we had an expert panel look at what happened with the bombing in Beirut and came out with a nonpartisan serious report. I think that's our precedent to look for.
Well, and I agree with you that until partisan becomes a non-issue, I'd like to move forward or back to a time where that was even possible, Howard. Mm-hmm. Hey, listen, if I can interrupt you for a minute, we have another caller at 518.
Sure.
And so thank you very much, but I hope we can speak again later in the hour.
Okay, I'll stay.
The Coffee Party, Be the Media Project, has a new feature, and that feature is called a Civics Minute. And this is a piece prepared by Director John Cashon. And so this week we are going to play just sort of an informational promo of what Civics Minutes are. And then starting next week, every week we'll get to have a Civics Minute. This is sort of based on the whole Coffee Party Educators program concept, where there are some things that we think, folks, I don't know. But without further ado, I'm going to click into our first Civics Minute.
Hello, everyone. This is John Cashin with the Coffee Party USA's Civics Minute. With today's internet culture, everyone is inundated with political news promoting a given ideological stance, one way or the other. Stories, videos, and pictures are posted on social media sites, and news websites and blogs have a very large audience tuning into them for the latest political moves coming from D.C. and in the country. Of course, there is a huge audience that watches the 24/7 news networks to keep up with the politics as well. It is obvious they promote their own political positions. But which one is right or wrong? This is where understanding American civics can help in resolving for yourself the correct answer. There are many the federal and state governments to confuse the public to what is happening. Sometimes that is exactly why it's done, to keep their actions under the public radar. My hope is to point you in the right direction for being your own civics detective so that you can know the truth of what's going on in our government. Stay tuned for more Civics Minute segments as you listen to your favorite Coffee Party USA blog talk radio shows. From Paducah, Kentucky, this is John Cashin. Good day, everyone.
I think that's amazing. Be your own civics detective. And based on the things we're talking about today, it seems more and more necessary. And hopefully more possible. So our next caller is area code 518. I'm opening your mic. Is this Joe?
Janine, yeah, Joe Pomponio, Albany, New York.
Thank you.
I really like what Howard has to say on the NSA. Again, he's at a higher level than I am at my understanding of what they're trying to do. You mentioned going back in time. You can go back in time with relation to what NSA is doing now. Let me use the word on steroids. Back in the day, and I'm going back to the 70s, when we did credit investigation and skip tracing, looking for people that owed money to banks and creditors, we worked from books, crisscross directories, calls directories. We had income directories, all readily purchasable from organizations that got this information legitimately. These were people's names and addresses, phone numbers, codes for what the income area was based on the Internal Revenue Service, information from the Census Bureau as to what type of area it was, business. It's involved. It takes days and weeks to do investigation. They put in, as I'm determining what's happening now, this on steroids. In other words, you can literally sit at a computer and in seconds or minutes do what it might have taken then 2-3 days to do, to draw up a picture. Now, from the picture, you make a determination on what movement you're going to take. Now, I'm being very loose about this because it's been 40 years, 50 years since I did anything like this. But this is what I see emerging. That as far as the recording of our phone conversations, I have serious reason to doubt that. But I'm not a person that can go to a security meeting and hear exactly what they're doing. I have representatives that should be able to do that. Of them, only a select group can go. And if I understand news reports correctly, most of them don't even go to the meetings. Now, this type of thing I've suspected for over 10 years. You know, I'm very sorry that the general public hasn't, like, woke up to this sooner. It's kind of old news for me. But in the fact that it's being brought out now, at least I can garner a little better what's going on. And, you know, we live in an age that, I don't know how to put this, our information is out there. Whether we realize it or not, we give it out. It's third-party information. I'm not talking directly to Facebook when I give them information. There are means that I use to convey a message to someone else. And anybody on that network that's allowed to view it can view it. So, yeah, we're on a slippery slope with legality. Now, can there be checks and balances? Of course there can. Should this be monitored closely? Yes. But, you know, I'd like to interject that there are other individuals on this planet doing this, okay, without government supervision for their own benefit. You know, and that's an area that, you know, nobody seems to either be aware of or wants to address. So, you know, if we're going to, let's say, go back in time, okay, the people doing this gathering should be under a control. My view, if it's for government use, it should be under government control, not contracted out or just, you know, collected from corporations that might be able to use it to give to other corporations or individuals that might want this information. So, you know, NSA's go ahead.
Well, I think that you've raised a couple of really interesting points, Joe. And again, I keep, since our audience are all time travelers today, I'm listening like, is this something we need to go backwards and undo? Is this something we need to go forward and change? But you said a couple of things that are really important. I live in the Silicon Forest, you know, up here in the Pacific Northwest. And I promise you, the number of companies that develop means of data mining on the internet is astounding. And they tend to be profitable companies. And so outside of this whole government surveillance question, we have this other issue, which is the whole expectation of privacy. And not only from our government, but from Walmart or from anybody that wants to sell you anything. You know, I think I get 150 spam a day, you know. So it's that's a crazy making point. Expectation of privacy. The other one that you raise up is, if this is a central government intelligence function, should we contract that work out? And I don't know if other people in chat or would like to call in and address that. I, for one, having a history of being a government contractor, would say no, we should not. And someday, you know, again, I don't want to repeat things I've said in previous shows, but does this all come back to whether or not it should be a contractor? Does that come back to our expectation of privacy, responsibility with data? What's your point about that exactly, Joe?
Well, if you're going to contract out things, I understand the government can't do everything. But if you're doing something that's ongoing, let me try and explain it a different way. Why do we not contract out our national defense system? Why don't we have individual pilots manning our nuclear weapon strike force or manning our nuclear strike missiles, handling our Navy, our military aspects? Okay? If this is going to be done and civil liberties that everybody is concerned with is on the forefront, you know, why is it that we can't put civil liberties in the same category as nuclear launch capabilities? It's a double standard. If you're going to be doing something that the public, okay, is protected constitutionally by, then they should have the same rights, okay, as our military, our government. You see where I'm coming from?
So here's my question, Joe. So are you saying that in all matters of, I mean, the right to privacy or the expectation of privacy, are you calling that a civil liberty?
To a point, yes. Yeah, you're never really free. Okay, you don't have an absolute right under any circumstance. But to regulate that right is a government feature. It's not something that a corporation, because they have access to that, can make a determination under the contract that they have with the party in government to allow them to use it in a separate way.
I'm saying, for example, if I go online, if I go to Amazon, I go to Amazon.com and I buy something. My financial information is in theory encrypted in such a way that that's a safe transaction, right? So why isn't what I bought also an encrypted piece of data? I mean, I see it might be useful to the guy I bought it from Amazon. They should be able to do internal evaluations of how many people buy these kinds of things and where those people live and what the shipping plus or minus might be and what the benefit of free shipping is. And that's an internal conversation to Amazon.com, and I'm just using them as an example.
Awesome.
But the truth be told about data mining is all of that is available. You know, everything up to the point of encrypting my, all the way up to the point of encrypting my credit card is available. And that's what data miners do. They know what websites you hit. They know all kinds of things. And so my expectation of privacy goes way back beyond government surveillance. Economic surveillance. I agree.
Okay.
This annoys me beyond belief that we even opened the door to this with this kind of data mining in what should be a personal transaction. Do I do not want to buy a pair of red cowboy boots? It's actually nobody's business. But it is, because I'm not supposed to have an expectation of privacy anymore.
I would agree with you there. But under the current laws, the way it's collected, if I go to Target and they ask for my zip code, they are mining me. They ask for my email address. I'm giving it to them freely. Now, it's on the person, okay, to give to a third party that type of information. And that when you do that, you're enabling them to put it on the market for sale to people that want to sell products, that want to categorize you and put you into certain categories so that merchandisers can then access that information and solicit you to buy their products. I'm not saying it's right, but I would believe it was even done before there was an internet. Okay, it's a foundation for how advertising works, how they place their ads in newspapers back in the 60s and 70s, back in the day. Again, this is just something that basically now is on steroids. And yes, if you could find people to introduce legislation to dial it back or to ask for your consent, which is something that I think should be done, okay, I got no problem. They want to follow me around. I was on a phone call with Verizon. Inadvertently, they mentioned something, and I said, look, I don't care who knows about me. I have contacts around the world on the Internet. If they want to spy on me, spy on me. Okay? I'll stand up, but that's me. You follow? That's not my neighbor. That's not somebody across the street. Okay?
Yes.
And I'm the only one that will get harmed by it if something is done wrong, which brings me into where is the recourse? What happens if my information inadvertently winds up somewhere and somebody sells that information and I've got credit obligations that I never signed up for? Where's my protection there? Where's my recourse?
I'm going to open Howard's mic again because I have this feeling he may have something to say about this. So let's bring Howard, if you're available. Oh, he just went away. I said I was going to open his mic and he hung up. Either that or we have the rare technological breakdown that occurs on Blog Talk. And we'll see if Howard calls back in. Anyway, I agree that if we're talking, there it is, 508, I'm opening your mic.
Sorry, high-tech problems, I cut myself off at this end.
Excellent. Well, at least
I do that a lot.
I was reaching
for
the speakerphone button and missed.
Oh, well, that's okay. So do you have a comment on this subject of data mining, right to privacy, civil liberties being undervalued?
Yeah, I think it's a complex thing. First, a lot of things in the society probably are going to run off data mining. And if you want the business, I'm not sure that we can avoid some of the data mining. There's also the issue, though, of I'm concerned with data mining that can get to private businesses much more than to the government. The government eventually is answerable. Corporations are not.
Right.
And, you know, the government also, though, tries to leverage like you have something to hide. Well, that's not something Amazon does. But once I had a cop coming door to door, there had been a crime in the neighborhood, came to my door and said, okay, can I come in and look around? I said, no. And he said, what, you got something to hide? And I said, detective, would you do me a favor then and drop your pants and underwear on my step? And he said, what? And I said, well, if you don't have something to hide, why would it bother you? And he walked off without a word. But
okay. How many speeding tickets have you gotten since then?
Oh, it can be fun if you know. I mean, I used to get people for security investigations all the time. And when the FBI agent flashes a credential and you say, excuse me, slow down, take it out of his hand, look at it, call his office and ask them to describe you're totally within your rights and watching him fume. But,
I used to be involved in security clearances too. You know, the people I worked with had to have security clearances from time to time. And my gosh, it is interesting. But so here's the thing. I mean, I already give a false email address when I have to give an email address to buy something. I never allow access to my Facebook friends or my Facebook thing to anybody that says, we want to have access to your Facebook Live.
Sure.
And I would say, no. And we do every, and sometimes that costs me participation. I went, well, if that's what it costs me to participate, I don't want in. And so, and even here at Coffee Party, we are very delicate about what we know about people. And it's very important to us that we never give that to anyone. And if we believe in, you know, if we want to promote something that someone else is doing, we do the messaging. We don't allow other groups, our mail list. Right? I mean, I think that there are some basic courtesies, and what this reminds me of, in a way, is what that Facebook poster earlier this morning said on Join the Coffee Party Movement, which is, I want to go back to a time of civility. And I think our notion of what's rude, what's imposing, what, you know, all of that has has shifted. And I'm not sure for the better. And so I'm curious. And I can open all mics. I know Ben is still here. We have 4 minutes left. And in the next couple of minutes, let me go from person to person. Say, what do you think about this? Is a return to a sense of civility, privacy, mutual respect, can that be infused to the technological, political, and sociological needs of a post-9/11 world, of a post-globalization world? And I'm going to start with Ben. Your mic is open.
Pardon me? Who?
And did you hear the question that I asked just now?
Yes.
Great. You have like a one-minute reaction to what civility might do in this, and civility and respect, courtesy.
I think it'll,
in all of these things,
we'll just be civil and respectful slaves. I mean, there are a lot of hidden agendas and assumptions being made for what's really going on. You know, everybody wants to think the best and assume the best, but it isn't that way. But it's nice to think so. But I think there are a lot of hidden agendas going on. And, you know, like for example, as an aside, Davis Besse Nuclear Power Plant in Ohio, in Toledo, Ohio, was discovered a 30-foot crack in the containment building. Now, that is directly downwind from Washington, D.C. and New York City. If that blows up, melts down like Three Mile Island, it'll take out Washington, D.C. and New York City and go around the world. So there's a lot more.
So I agree. I think that if we assumed responsibility, respect, and sort of this mutual, you know, if propaganda was trumped by mutual concern, I think that would go a long way. Thanks, Ben. Joe, do you have a one-minute answer to my question?
Yes, and I think I gave it earlier. Simply show respect and ask for consent, okay? And build into your system, if my information is misused, I have some available recourse. You know, I understand we're in a global economy. This thing is globally effective. We can't control the world, but in our country, we still are citizens, and ask and give me some recourse so that if I'm wrong, I have a chance to at least clear things up legitimately.
Thank you. Howard, you have a one-minute answer to my question?
Yeah, I think some of it is no going back. Forget about the surveillance, for example. I think a great opportunity to say what we give up is look at Google Maps, especially when it goes down to Street View. Is that useful? But is it also more than you want to know about your neighborhood? I think that in the government side, what we need to be doing is having more real audits and more checks and balances. For example, I do think there is some justification for having a global call metadata database with statute of limitations on it, but I think the searches on it need warrants. It's not technically feasible unless you have the whole thing. Same sort of thing, there should be something adversarial in the FISA court, but I don't think you can do away with the FISA court. And it's really a little strange to say you've got to have adversarial things for a warrant, because that's not done in ordinary criminal things. You don't tell Charlie the Tuna that he's getting wiretapped because he stopped talking. So by definition, wiretap warrants are secret even before intelligence. The question is, do we need stronger measures? And it's probably true. There's a huge problem, and I've written on it, about the oversight of intelligence agencies that needs to be improved. There have been good examples, and that we've gotten carried away with from 9/11 about not having effective audit.
Thank you. Thank you. I have to say, when Ben opened this with basically saying there's a lot of good intentions gone bad here, I think that that plays into what both Joe and Howard said. Well, we're come to the end of our hour together, and it's time for me to tell you all about Coffee Party USA. Blog Talk Radio happens for us on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. On Monday, it's Dan Aronson, who hosts Press One for Democracy, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Sorry about that. Tuesdays, Michael Charney and Eric Beiler host The Middle Ground, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. Thursday, here you are, Lunch with Loudon, noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. And Saturday, Egberto Willis hosts Politics Done Right, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. Coffee Party USA is a totally grassroots, crowdsourced organization. Citizens United has not benefited us. If you'd like to become a member, go to www.coffeepartyusa.com and find that big red member button. You can also donate rather than become a member if that makes you more comfortable. Same address, www.coffeepartyusa.com, and click on Free the Elected. Thanks for your partnership. It's been a wonderful show, Debbie Lynn. Thank you for your partnership today.
Every week. Love it.
Excellent. I want everybody to be looking, if you're on the mailing list for Join the Coffee Party USA, you'll be getting a poll in the next few days. We're going to be asking you a question, and we're going to be discussing the answer to that question next week on Lunch with Loudon. Keep calm and coffee party on.